In what locality did this Mr. James or Thomas Cardew come across this ordinary handbag?
In the cloakroom at Victoria Station. It was given to him in mistake for his own.
The cloakroom at Victoria Station?
Yes, the Brighton line.
The line is immaterial. Mr. Worthing, I confess I am somewhat bewildered by what you have just told me. To be born, or at any rate bred, in a handbag, whether it had handles or not, seems to me to display a contempt for the ordinary decencies of family life that reminds one of the worst excesses of the French Revolution. And I presume you know what that unfortunate movement led to. As to the particular locality in which the handbag was found, a cloakroom at a railway station might serve to conceal a social indiscretion. Indeed, it has probably been used for that purpose more than once. But it could hardly be regarded as an assured basis for a recognized position in good society.
May I ask you then what you would advise me to do? I need hardly say that I would do anything in the world to ensure Gwendolyn's happiness.
I would strongly advise you, Mr. Worthing, to try and acquire some relations as soon as possible, and to make a definite effort to produce at any rate one parent of either sex before the season is quite over.
I don't see how I could possibly manage to do that. I can produce the handbag at any moment. It is in my dressing room at home. I really think that should satisfy you, Lady Bracknell.
Me, sir? What has it to do with me? You can hardly imagine that I and Lord Bracknell would dream of allowing our only daughter, a girl brought up with the utmost care, to marry into a cloakroom and form an alliance with a parcel. Kindly open the door for me, sir.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the Invisible College. This is your host, John Pistelli. You have been listening to Joan Plowright as Lady Bracknell in a 1986 British TV adaptation of The Importance of Being Earnest that I found on YouTube. I thought that we should hear from a professional performer some of Wilde's great and amusing lines from this play, and she does that with great aplomb. I won't be reading necessarily many of the sort of speeches or exchanges. I'll have a rather different approach to the play, as you'll see in a minute, but I thought we should at least hear what a good performance of that really sounds like. So as you can see, this will be an episode of The Invisible College, my series of literature courses for paid subscribers of my Substack, Grand Hotel Abyss, on Oscar Wilde. We have reached the end of the 19th century, the fin de siècle. We reached it last week with George Bernard Shaw, another comic playwright of the period, a somewhat of a rival of Wilde's, though one who would outlive him by 50 years and come, as we saw last week, to define some of the, if not the literature, then some of the politics and other kinds of thinking of the 20th century. But it would be Wilde who would win the argument in the long run. Well, the longer run. We don't know what the long run is, but we live in Wilde's world more than Shaw's, which is why I put them in the order in which I did. I put Shaw first and then Wilde. I mean, we do live in Shaw's world in some ways, but in the artistic or the literary or the academic humanities, we live in Wilde's world, and that will be part of the argument I will be making today in this lecture on the figure of Wilde, the figure and the work of Wilde. The title of this lecture is In an Age of Surfaces, which is a line from The Importance of Being Earnest. It is something that Lady Bracknell says. She says, "We live, I regret to say, in an age of surfaces." And I think we still live in that age of surfaces that Wilde, in many respects, inaugurates in his art and is the first to comprehensively theorize in his art and in his criticism. And as you will see, he did not make a great separation between art and criticism. And so this will be about Wilde. This will be about The Importance of Being Earnest, but I will also go into some of Wilde's nonfiction writing. As in the Shelley episode or in the Byron episode, we have a very dramatic life story here. and I will be sort of struggling. And I do know this one in pretty great detail. I have read the detailed biographies on this one. I am kind of a completist on this one in terms of the work. Don't ask me about the Duchess of Padua, some, you know, Elizabethan pastiche drama he wrote or something. I didn't read that one. And I, don't ask me about all his poems. But for the, you know, for the most part, I've read all of Wilde, I think. And I do know, I knew the criticism and I know the biography pretty well. I have a doctoral dissertation chapter on Wilde, which is why I've never actually spoken of him or written of him kind of online and with any detail before. There's no essay on any of Wilde's works at johnpastelli.com in the archive. And I never really said anything beyond what I said in my doctoral dissertation. And I won't entirely be reprising that argument, which I didn't review anyway. That's over 10 years old now. But I do, my point is, I do know Wilde in some detail, in some greater detail than I know some of our other authors, like Shaw, for instance, where I'm much more just sort of scratched the surface of Shaw in my researches, whereas I know Wilde's work in more detail than that. And so I think that will be reflected here. I will be using The Importance of Being Earnest as a kind of fulcrum with which to look at all of his work, kind of like I did with Shaw last week. And I do think The Importance of Being Earnest is kind of his most perfect work, his perfect achievement, the consummation of everything he seemed to be striving toward. But I think that itself is a kind of fraught or painful fact of his life's work that is not something that we're simply going to celebrate. And I'm probably more interested in some of his other work. My dissertation chapter was about his only novel, The Picture of Dorian Gray. I probably think his best work, his best writing, aside from the dialogue of The Importance of Being Earnest, his best writing is probably in his nonfiction, in his Platonic dialogues, his essays, and his final testament, De Profundis. But I'll talk about all that. I have a lot to say about Wilde. Again, we have a life story that's going to really struggle for attention with the work, and I'm going to try to keep it all under control. As I think I said in an earlier one of these, I think I'm probably better where I know less about the writer. It's easier to do a two-hour podcast on somebody you know less about because you're not sort of harassed by all the things you do know and don't have time to say, or all the qualifications or complications, or this critic said this and this critic said that. It was easier to talk about Shaw because I know less about him. It's easier to talk about what you don't understand. Not that I claim to understand Wilde. He's a difficult figure, a kind of illegible figure, ultimately, a figure of the surface. And there is no depth, but the surface itself is a bit illegible, or is a mirror, I'm out of metaphors, but I'll strive to use it as a prism rather than a mirror if I can. But Oscar Wilde, in an age of surfaces, I'm going to get right into the lecture without any kind of rambling preamble. The illustration on my slide, perhaps predictably, what do you pair visually with Wilde? Often he is paired with an artistic collaborator of his, Aubrey Beardsley, one of the illustrators in the aesthetic and decadent movement in which Wilde was involved, though he died quite young at age 25. Well, Wilde died young too, but not that young. I have here an image from Beardsley of a kind of androgynous angel, an angel with an ambiguously gendered face, ambiguously gendered hair, female breasts, the hint of a penis, wings inside of a heart. And the image is called The Mirror of Love. That's kind of a deep cut for my fellow comic book devotees, my fellow Alan Moore devotees. Some of you will know what I mean. Otherwise, just Google The Mirror of Love. And that's just my illustration. I'll talk more about Wilde's collaboration with Beardsley and about aesthetic and decadent art as we go, but the idea here is to capture something of Wilde's own in this drawing, this very sort of clear line, but incredibly ambiguous and sexually alluring and sexually troubling and sexually mysterious image, I think it evokes something of the figure of Wilde himself and of the figure of Wilde and his work. Interestingly, I said I was going to not do a preamble, but I'll do one little preamble. Interestingly, Wilde was a book reviewer for a number of years, a very interesting book reviewer, and one of his reviews was of a biography of Keats, one of our prior subjects, and Keats was one of Wilde's favorite poets and one of Wilde's inspirations as a poet. And he begins the review, Wilde, by talking about the sort of illegitimacy of literary biographies, that it's gossip, that it is, he calls it sort of prying, kneeling at peepholes, you know, sneaking up backstairs and kneeling at peepholes. You're kind of, if you're the literary biographer, the person interested in the life of the great artist who wants to peer behind the surface, is ultimately, while they might claim to have some, well, today, as we often discuss here, they claim to have some moral intention, but really Wilde says they're just sort of a pervert. They're just a snoop and a sneak and just motivated by the normal low, debased curiosity that motivates prying and peeping and gossip. And so he begins there, but then he, as he goes on in the review, he says the other problem with this biography of Keats that he's talking about is it tries to separate the life from the work. And he says the only occasion to discuss the life is the work. And so if you're going to discuss the life at all, then the point is to synthesize these two things, to make clear the way in which the work and the life were of a piece. The work and the life were one production, were one thing, were one single work of art. And so in that way, I think I will try to do justice to this, because you can't not talk about the life of Wilde. And I don't think he would advise us to look for the deep truth of his work, which he would disclaim had a deep truth, in his life. He would ask us to look at the life equally as his work of art, as part of the surface of the text rather than the depth of the text. And so that will be what I will strive to do as we talk about Wilde's life, his criticism, his drama. And even as we go on, we want to talk about some critics on Wilde, and I do have a few for you. We will rejoin Camille Paglia's Sexual Personae, which I think we left off with in the Romantic era, and I want to look at a few other remarks, including a queer theorist Eve Kosofsky Sedgwick. So we'll see what she had to say, too. So that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to fire up this slideshow. Remember, if you are listening to the free portion of this, which should probably be ending about now, you will want to go to grandhotelabyss.substack.com, and you will want to, first of all, offer a free subscription to that, so you at least get my free weekly newsletter, which everybody who's anybody in the literary and cultural world is reading. You'll want to get that with a free subscription, but then you also want to go there and get a paid subscription, so you can get a hold of the full episode here, the previous full episodes. We're developing quite a back catalog. I think this is our 13th episode. We're heading toward high modernism. We're heading toward Joseph Conrad, W.B. Yeats, D.H. Lawrence, Virginia Woolf, all sorts of exciting people. And then this summer, we're going to immerse ourselves in two big books, which if you've never read before, or if you tried to read and you wiped out, or if you haven't read since 20 years ago when you were in college, or anything to do with, or if you're, there are your old favorites, but you want to hear, you want to get a fresh perspective on them, we are going to be reading Ulysses and Middlemarch this summer on this whatever we want to call this podcast, this lecture course, this program. So you will want to go to grandhotelabyss.com and offer a paid subscription so you don't miss any of that. We have Moby Dick and American literature coming up in the fall. So you will want to go to grandhotelabyss.substack.com, at least give a free subscription. You probably want a paid subscription. That paid subscription will also get you access to ebook versions of all my published novels, the serial versions of my most recent novel, Major Arcana,